Thanks. I now have the pleasure of welcoming Jonathan Randina, who's going to talk about stigma, discrimination, and sexual risk behavior among gay and bisexual men in the U.S. military. John holds an MPH in biostatistics from the City University of New York School of Public Health. He's a doctoral candidate in social psychology at the Graduate Center, CUNY. He currently has an individual predoctoral NRSA fellowship from NIMH and serves as the senior data analyst at CHEST. Jonathan?
Thank you. Okay, so Jeff kind of gave a nice little lead-in to my talk, although he wasn't talking about sexual risk behavior specifically. There was a lot of mention of the influence that harassment and stigma can play in the military and behaviors in general, and what I'll be focusing on today is the role of those different forms of stigma and harassment and how they influence the sexual risk behavior of gay and bisexual men in this sample. As with Jeff, I have no relationships to disclose. So I want to give a brief background to orient us all onto the topic of my talk. LGBT victimization and stigma in the military have historically been problematic. I don't think this will come as a surprise to anyone. The image that I have on here is from an online web article where they interviewed some men in the military who basically described how sexual orientation-based name-calling and whatnot is used as a major component of the training activities in the military to sort of break people down and get them into the mindset of a group mentality. And more than half of military personnel were openly opposed to LGBT members being able to serve shortly before the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, just showing that the attitudes in the military towards serving alongside openly gay and lesbian and bisexual individuals were still very negative right before the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And so probably they haven't changed tremendously since then. Sexual risk in the military is sort of a topic that we know very little about, particularly among gay and bisexual men in the military, given that for most of this time they have not been able to serve openly, and therefore there haven't been many studies on their sexual risk behavior. One study of men in the military in general who had been recently affected with HIV found that 37% had engaged in same-sex behavior around the time of their infection, and of all of the men in this sample, 84% had not used condoms consistently during anal or vaginal sex. Now, this is obviously a very specific sample given that they are men who were recently infected with HIV, and we also didn't have any information in this paper about the intersection of sexual risk behavior and the same-sex behavior of the men. And so we don't know exactly how the same-sex behavior factors into the sexual risk behavior, but that is pretty much one of the only studies about sexual risk behavior in the military. We also know that internalized homophobia and sexual orientation-based victimization have been examined in relation to sexual risk in general samples of gay and bisexual men. For example, Newcomb and Mustansky did a meta-analysis in which they found some very wide different varying effects of internalized homophobia and sexual risk behavior, and did also examine some moderators of those associations. However, there has been no existing research that we're aware of on the relative association of different forms of stigma within and outside the military on sexual risk behavior of men in the military. And so the focus of this study today was to examine the extent to which the sexual behavior of gay and bisexual men in the military is influenced by four different types of stigma that they could experience. The first one is internalized homophobia, or really having a negative sense of self that's related to your sexual orientation. The second one is experiencing gay-related discrimination in their everyday lives, so the extent to which these men are treated poorly as a result of their perceived sexual orientation. And then the next two are very similar. We have gay-related harassment in everyday life, and we have gay-related harassment in the military, and I'll focus more on these measures in just a second. As Jeff did, I want to thank the people involved in the project. And again, I'll just go over this really quickly because Jeff already did this, but they were recruited through listservs and Facebook groups. They were eligible if they were at least 18, LGBT identified or had same-sex experience, and were active within the past 5 years or a reservist. And we asked them a ton of different questions, as Jeff already went over. And for my talk today, I'm focusing on the gay and bisexual males. So biological males in the sample were 60%. And of those, I'm focusing on those who were sexually active with casual male partners. So some of these men were sexually active with only main partners, and those men were included or excluded from the analyses. I focused only on the sexual behavior with casual male partners. And the sample is still relatively similar to what Jeff had presented already, even though it is a smaller sample of 102 men in the sample. A majority white, a majority gay, a majority, not surprisingly that I limited this to men who were sexually active with casual partners, we see a higher proportion of single men in this sample than in the sample in general. And again, a majority negative or unknown identified. So we used Herrick's internalized homophobia measure, and we used an adapted version of the Everyday Discrimination Scale to measure sexual orientation-based discrimination. Gay-related harassment in the military and gay-related harassment outside the military were measured in the exact same way. They were scales that are based off of the Department of Defense's evaluation report done in 2000, and it first asks how often they've witnessed or experienced events involving military personnel because of perceived homosexuality, and then it asks the same exact items regarding day-to-day life outside of the military and whether or not they've witnessed or experienced harassment as a result of perceived sexual orientation. So the first thing I want to point out is that internalized homophobia, which is the one measure about the extent to which negative experiences actually make a person take on negative views of themselves, was actually unrelated to all three forms of more objective stigma in the sample. However, those three different forms of a more objective stigma were all significantly correlated with each other in a positive way. So what I'll be presenting today are two negative binomial regressions with the four stigma variables as predictors. And I'll be focusing, one, on the number of casual male sexual partners that they had in the past 3 months, and two, on the number of anal sex acts they had without a condom in the past 3 months with their casual male partners. And I adjusted for demographic characteristics in each of these models that were associated with sexual risk behavior. I also tested for an interaction between active status and harassment in the military to see whether it was really the men who were recently experiencing these forms of harassment for whom these were becoming problematic. So this is just the distribution of the number of casual male partners. As you can see, on average, men had between 4 and 5 partners with a median of 2. So these men were relatively sexually active. It's not as though all of them were having sex with only one partner who might be considered more of a regular or steady partner. And in the negative binomial model predicting the number of casual male partners, we see two significant findings. The first one is gay-related harassment outside of the military, and we're actually seeing that higher experiences of gay-related harassment outside of the military are associated with a decrease in the rate of the number of casual partners. So these men are less sexually active if they're experiencing a lot of harassment outside of the military. However, gay-related harassment inside of the military is associated with a significant increase in the number of partners, and I'll talk a little bit more about why I think this might be when we get to the discussion. And then this is the distribution of the number of anal sex acts without a condom. As you can see, the median here is 0, so a majority of the sample was not engaging in sexual risk behavior, so this is a promising finding. However, you can see that there is quite a bit of variation, and we have some people who had as many as 41 acts of unprotected anal intercourse with casual male partners. And in the negative binomial model predicting this outcome, we see that gay-related harassment outside of the military, again, is negatively associated with sexual risk behavior. So men who experience or perceive higher levels of harassment outside of the military are actually engaging in a lower rate of sexual risk behavior. Gay-related harassment inside the military was significant when it was by itself, but when this interaction term between active duty and gay-related harassment in the military was entered, that main effect went away, and I'll plot this interaction for you in just a moment so you can see more of what it looks like. So what we're really seeing here is that for active duty men, high levels of harassment are associated with increases in the rate of sexual risk behavior. We're not seeing many differences between the inactive duty men in general and also the active duty men who are not experiencing a lot of harassment. The real driving factor here is the active duty men who are experiencing a lot of harassment. So some general conclusions from this. The median number of casual male sexual partners was 2, and the number of unprotected anal intercourse acts was 0. So this does suggest that a majority of men are engaging in safer sexual behaviors, which is great. We saw that internalized homophobia was unrelated to experiences of gay-related discrimination and witnessing or experiencing of gay-related harassment. And this suggests that these more objective experiences don't actually appear to become internalized and shape the way that these men were viewing themselves. And we saw that internalized homophobia and experiences of gay-related discrimination were unrelated to sexual behaviors. So that was an interesting finding, that these two things seem to have gotten eclipsed by the harassment variables inside and outside of the military. We saw that sexual orientation-based harassment outside of the military was negatively associated with the number of partners, which is kind of an interesting and slightly confusing finding. One possibility is that men who feel that the world as a whole is more hostile towards their sexual orientation may actually engage less frequently in sexual behavior in general, or at least with fewer partners, which might not be terribly surprising when you think about it that way. We found that sexual orientation-based harassment inside of the military was positively associated with the number of partners, and this could be a result of several different possible factors. For example, one may be that they're coping with this stigma inside of the military through sexual risk behavior. Another is that they could be leaving the military setting more frequently to go to gay-friendly places. So, for example, if I feel like the military is a very harassing place towards my sexual orientation, I may seek to go to more gay-friendly places on a more regular basis, in which case I'm more likely to interact with other gay and bisexual men and therefore potentially increase my ability to have higher numbers of sexual partners. We also saw that sexual orientation-based harassment inside of the military was associated with a greater frequency of UAI, but this was mostly true only for those who were actively serving within the past year. One possible mechanism for this is that harassment may lead to other mechanisms. So, for example, Jeff just did a great talk about the role of anxiety and depression and their association with alcohol use. We know that all three of these variables are commonly associated with sexual risk behavior among gay and bisexual men in general, so it's possible that these forms of harassment are actually leading to increases in things like anxiety, depression, PTSD, and substance use, and that subsequent increases in those things lead to increases in sexual risk behavior. That's certainly something that we can test in the future in this data set. Another possibility is that men who are witnessing or experiencing higher levels of harassment may be in areas with fewer resources available to them. So if they're in areas that are highly harassing in general, it's very likely that these are also areas where access to free condoms is going to be less likely because their areas are going to be more conservative in general. They may also be relying on different means of meeting partners that rely more often on non-condom use. So, for example, they may have more secretive encounters than men who are in less harassing environments, and therefore this may also be associated with their increases in sexual risk behavior. Of course, these data are not without their limitations. It's a relatively small convenience sample, about 100 men. I mean, it's great to get a sample of 100 sexually active gay and bisexual men. This hasn't been done before, so that was very exciting, but this isn't an incredibly large sample, so it's hard to generalize to a population of gay and bisexual men in the military. And this sample may also have been biased towards members experiencing less internalized homophobia and stigma in general, given that they had to be willing to participate in this survey in the first place. We also relied on retrospective sexual recall, similar to what Jeff talked about, and we required the men to have internet access, and so we may be missing a huge portion of the men in the military in that we're requiring that they have internet access, and men who are deployed are probably a lot less likely to have regular access to the internet. I think that this talk suggests that structural forms of stigma within the military may be associated with military personnel engaging in practices that are harmful to their health, and structural level interventions are needed that may help to reduce the sexual risk behavior of these men. We also, of course, need additional research to investigate the negative experiences of these men in the military and examine whether these trends are observed across a variety of samples. I want to acknowledge everyone who was involved in the project, as Jeff already did, and this is my information in case you have any future questions. Thank you.